Campbell's here.
Dr. Spatt?
Andrew.
Dr. Rubin?
Present.
Ms. Gallen, are you with us? Ms. Gallen? Dr. Sadek, it seems like we're missing Ms. Gallen.
Okay. We have quorum. The only thing is if we don't have her, then she won't be able to participate. We want to give her one more minute, and then if she's unable to get back on, we'll roll on the game.
Okay.
Ms. Gallen, are you on the line? I haven't heard a click on. So let's go ahead and let's roll ahead, Gail.
Okay.
On that particular case.
And Dr. Sadek, are we going with the next in line, 21204?
We could, or are you aware if case number 21201. Dr. Cullen, are you on the line?
I am.
Okay.
And I'm Steve Mahaffey representing Dr. Cullen.
Okay.
Yeah,
Dr. Sally?
Yes, sir.
Dr. Sally, I have to recuse myself on this case.
Yeah, I know you're recused. I've already got notice. Yeah, let's go ahead and roll with 21204. Dr. Espinal. Dr. Espinal, are you on the line?
Oh, yes, I am here.
Okay.
And this is Mr. Chairman, this is Scott King. I'm also here on behalf of Dr. Espinal.
Okay. Thanks, Mr. King. Could we go ahead, Gail, and can you give us the rundown on Dr. Espinal?
Yes.
And just really quick, Mr. Chair, members of the board, I heard someone else click on. I just wanted to check, is Ms. Gallen present? Or?
Yes, that's me.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. So let the minute show at 2:15 that Ms. Gallen has rejoined us.
Okay. And Dr. Sadek, members of the board, this is case number 21204. The State of Arizona Naturopathic Physicians Medical Board received a complaint from KG alleging the dose of iron prescribed by respondent was too high and administered via IV too quickly, causing an allergic reaction. Records indicate KG, a 47-year-old female, is a patient who resides in the state of Colorado. She initially presented to the clinic on 12/27/2015. In January of 2019, respondent assumed KG's care through a combination of in-person and telehealth visits. According to the medical records, on September 20th, 2021, KG presented to the clinic. Upon respondent's orders, KG received an IV infusion of 500 milligrams of Venofor. Unfortunately, KG began experiencing a reaction shortly after the IV was DC'd, which included swelling, hives, redness, throat closing, and nausea. KC was administered an EpiPen at the same time 911 was being called. KG seized for about 10 seconds, but quickly stabilized. Approximately 5 minutes after she seized, the paramedics arrived and took over her care. She was taken to Honor Health Scottsdale Medical Center by ambulance.
you. Dr. Spinoza, can you give us your rundown version?
Yes, Mr. Chairman and members of the board, thank you for the opportunity to address you today. On September 20th, 2021, patient KG, a 47-year-old female with normal kidney function, Hashimoto's disease, and low ferritin, experienced a well-recognized complication from the Venofer infusion, which included hypotension, hives, throat closing, and nausea. Dr. Rannan, the other physician at Integrative Health, evaluated KG because I was not in the office that day. Dr. Rannan ordered the administration of an EpiPen for her and called 911. The paramedics transported the patient to Honor Health Scottsdale State Emergency Department, where she was admitted for evaluation and treatment overnight. One of KG's treating physicians at the emergency department consulted a toxicologist about KG's case during her hospital stay. And per the medical records, the toxicologist stated, quote, "It is not uncommon to see bradycardia and hypotension like this with iron infusions," end quote. Although I am aware of other patients who did not experience a similar adverse reaction to Venofer at the equivalent dose and infusion rate, I believe KG's post-Venofer infusion reaction probably occurred secondary to administering the iron IV too quickly. However, we should note that KG did not complain of any adverse symptoms during the iron infusion or immediately after. Since this matter occurred, we now administer the Venofer brand iron in quantities of 100 to 200 milligrams infused over 1 hour, even though the guidelines permit 15-minute infusion time for those two doses. As stated in Dr. Rannan's November 22, 2021 letter, Dr. Rannan personally trained Ms. Kira McMorrow from her hire date on January 4, 2021 through May 8, 2021. And Dr. Rannan instructed Ms. McMorrow on the vitamins and nutrients for each of the IV bags, the preparation of the IV bags, starting the IVs, calculation of IV drip rates, while following all the necessary medical and safety protocols. Either Dr. Rannan or I provided direct on-site supervision to Ms. McMorrow, and we instructed Ms. McMorrow to come to us if she had any questions about the administration of an IV. In other words, either Dr. Rannan or I was physically present on site to consult with Ms. McMorrow if she had any questions about administering an IV that we had ordered. We never permitted Ms. McMorrow to administer an IV if both Dr. Rannan and I were not were off site. In addition, Ms. McMorrow attended the International IV Nutritional Therapy Seminar, which focused on the fundamental and clinical applications of IV nutrient therapies. And she attended that from March 4th to March 7th, 2021. And further, Ms. McMorrow obtained her emergency medical technician certificate from Paradise Valley Community College on May 8, 2021. I respectfully submit that we appropriately trained and supervised Ms. McMorrow in the administration of IV. And to state again, the toxicologist consulted by the emergency department physician stated, quote, "It is not uncommon to see bradycardia and hypotension like this with iron infusions." I agree with the toxicologist that hypotension and bradycardia can occur with iron infusions. I further believe that the infusion rate probably caused and or contributed to the post-infusion reaction. I respectfully ask the board to dismiss this case, and I am available to answer any questions that the board members may have. Thank you.
So with this particular patient, the laboratories that were done prior to administration, are you running total iron binding capacities? I know you're running the ferritin, but what other specific hematology labs are you running?
Right. So we'll run a CBC. At that time, I had not ordered an iron panel. However, now I am running that with all my patients who have a question about their ferritin.
So you are running, at this time, total iron binding capacity laboratories?
Yes.
Okay. So when this patient arrived over at the hospital, the emergency department, they pulled a BG level of 204 on her. that could have been somewhat from distress of the actual incident of the IV administration. She was a little bit, you know, hypokalemic. In addition, her RBCs and H&H were off. The EMT that you have doing this, it's a basic EMT. It's not an EMTI or paramedic level.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And then are you, does she have IV certification of some sort then?
So she attended the IV IINTMP course that a lot of naturopaths attend, because certain states such as California require that naturopaths have that training. So she attended that same training, plus she worked directly with Dr. Rannan from, I believe from January through May of 2021, with direct like training from Dr. Rannan as to how to administer IVs. So it was about approximately 5 months.
And has she been a patient since this incident happened?
I have not. I reached out to her over the phone on the day day of and days after the IV and the reaction, but she's not followed up with me. And
okay. Just for my edification, is the complaint online? No.
Yes.
You are online. If you're KG.
Yes.
Let me roll down to Dr. Papil, your thoughts on this.
Dr. Espinal, you mentioned some calculation that you used as proprietary to you guys to determine the proper dose of iron. Is that calculation based on IV iron? I guess tell me how you came up with the decision to go with 500 milligrams, which is generally higher than what's recommended typically.
So, Dr. Christensen has the protocol that we've been using at the clinic that goes based off of the stages of what's called latent iron deficiency. And so you can look at a patient's ferritin levels and various iron levels, hemoglobin, CBC studies, and then you also go by what their weight is, and that determines the amount of iron that they would need for repletion.
And that's based on IV iron, you're saying?
Yes.
Okay. And my understanding in standard hematology clinics is that Venofer or IV iron is known as we said, to cause these reactions, and that often even pre-meds such as Benadryl or even in some cases steroids are given. Was your understanding that pre-meds were ever given to decrease the inflammatory reaction that can occur?
No.
And I believe, I don't have the paperwork in front of me, but the infusion time, generally my understanding was over a 2-3-4 hour period of time. Is that also different than what your experience was? Obviously you said the smaller doses could be administered quickly, but I just, that's different than my knowledge based on IV iron.
Correct. So to my knowledge, dosing that are, higher than 300, 400, those should be done over 3.5 to 4 hours. It was my understanding that those guidelines per the medication were being followed. However, obviously, they were not in this case.
Okay. So the expected time that you put this IV was that you were expecting the IV to drip over 3 to 4 hours.
Correct. Of note, though, we have had several patients who've received the same dose and administration period of time and have not had any reactions to that. So this is not the first 500 milligram administration that was given at the clinic.
Okay. And moving forward, what is your expected plan as far as the higher doses? Are you going to roll the dice? Are you planning to administer it over 3 or 4 hours, regardless of whatever their previous tolerance was?
No. So, regardless of the previous part, anybody who is going to be getting an iron IV, we've already changed our dosing strategy just to, so that we don't have to have this happen again. So we have adjusted our dosing as per what is established in the Venofer medications, but we're limiting now to 100 to 200 doses from now on. And those are going to be dripped over an hour time period regardless. So, and obviously too, when we're starting, the IVs, that we're going to be doing it even slower, and then per tolerance you can go up, but to not exceed where we're doing it quicker than an hour.
And I believe I read on this particular patient you had even done a test dose. Or is that something you're going to plan on doing in all patients moving forward, is a small test dose to determine reactivity?
So she had received two iron IVs in the past. She had done the 100 milligram dose approximate, well, it was about July of 2020. And then she had a second IV, I believe, at another facility. A test dose is always... So moving forward, we can do that.
All right, sounds good. That's all the questions I have for now.
Thank you. Let me drop down to you, Dr. Rubin.
Thank you. This is Dr. Rubin. Hi, Dr. Espinal. Hey, how come you guys have decided to not go above 200 milligrams from that one?
It was just felt just since we see that the 15, that those two doses can be administered in 15 minutes, we're trying to stick to what the material for the medication is. So it was just decided to lower it and that way we could administer it in an hour's time and no one had to the rates or anything complicating potential hypotension in the future.
Oh, so you changed, you don't use that proprietary calculator anymore?
Correct.
Okay, so does that change do you think prospectively that's going to change your outcomes, since you guys are, sounds like you're doing it based on time allotted in the chair versus what they need, or did the guidelines change because you found better data?
So we changed it just so that people would have, they're just going to have to come back either for a second or a third, bag. So, yeah.
Well, they'll get the same total intended dose, spread it out. Okay.
Correct. Just spreading it out. It might be inconvenient for some of our out-of-state patients, but that's just what we're going to be doing now. So, or they can get an IV, if they're locally.
I may have missed it, but when you wrote the order for the IV Venofer 500 milligrams, had you indicated for it to be over a longer period of time based on package insert guidelines?
I did not. The reason being is it was my understanding that those were happening. So we've been doing iron IVs for many, many years at the clinic. And so the protocols were already established and in place. But that is something that I now have changed and am putting in every single order. Just to have all that in for Kira, for Ms. McMorrow to follow.
Well, you said that was your understanding that those guidelines were being followed. So then when you went back and looked, were they being followed?
Well, no. So the vinifer was being dripped approximately at a 6 mL per minute rate. Our facilities, natural habitat facilities, are also doing it at that rate. I've talked to doctors after this just to see how they are, what the rate is for their clinics, and that's which is consistent with how KG's administration was. However, it's just it's always prudent to just do it as slow as you can.
Oh wait, so you so in your clinic, a 500 milligram dose was given to other patients quickly, but they didn't have side effects.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
And your,
yes,
your colleagues are also doing that too, and they haven't seen side effects, but this patient had the side effects.
Correct. This patient did, unfortunately. Yeah. But, you know, we just decided to change route.
You haven't talked to the patient since the incident, correct?
I spoke with her a few days after she was discharged from the hospital, so we had a discussion then. And then I tried calling her about a week following that initial discussion, but I didn't hear from her since then. So.
Got it. So you don't know if there's any latent side effects or problems that could be attributed to the rapid infusion. Okay.
Right. I don't. I did call the hospital on the day of the incident, though, and spoke with her attending provider there. So.
So why again did Ms. Morrow administer it so quickly? Is it, remind me?
So I think she was following the guidelines as per what her training was from Dr. Rannan. Again, my understanding was that it was following the vinifer packet.
Got it. Dr. Rannan trained her.
Correct.
You prescribed it, and Ms. Morrow administered it, and Dr. Rannan was in the clinic at the time.
Correct. Yeah, okay. She trained with Dr. Rannan approximately 5 months prior to starting to administer IVs at the clinic.
Got it. Okay. Dr. Sadalek, I don't have any more questions.
Okay. Dr. Spatt, let me move up to you.
I don't have any questions at the moment. Thank you.
Okay. Dr. Campbell?
My questions were all regarding specificity of the order. Those were, are you planning on calling, Mr. Chairman?
I'm sorry, that was that directed at me? Sorry, it broke up.
Oh, no, I was asking, I was telling Mr. Chairman I had no other questions and was inquiring whether or not he was going to call on the complainant next.
Yeah, I just want to run up my list here real quick to Ms. Gallen.
Thank you.
Ms. Gallen, do you have any questions?
I don't right now.
And Ms. Tippett?
No questions.
Okay. And then I know we have the complainant on the line. Can you give us KG?
Yes.
Can you give us your summation? I read it. You had one IV with them prior to this unfortunate incident.
And it was only 100 milligrams, 500. First I'm going to say I really love this clinic, and I'm really saddened that this happened because I felt at home there. I really like Dr. Espinal. But the whole situation was, I felt like after the 500 milligrams, I immediately had a reaction. I stood up, went into the bathroom. I could see the rash crawling up my legs. I went back out to tell somebody I was having a reaction. They had me wait by myself in a room for the doctor. I don't really feel like it's a great way to treat somebody who's having an allergic reaction. You know, send them and sit by themselves. They seem hesitant to give me the EpiPen. It was administered, I believe, after I passed out. I don't really have a whole lot to add. I'm really glad to hear that they're making some changes that fit more of what actual prescribing, Jennifer says online as far as they're prescribing. It was a straight drip. There was no pump. And I never saw the other doctor that was there until after I had a reaction. So I don't know what questions you have.
How are you feeling currently?
I am fine. I'm fine now. It was mentally difficult afterwards, but I'm fine now.
Thank you. Board members, additional comments, suggestions for this case?
Mr. Chairman, this is Scott King. May I make a brief statement?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Regarding the reaction and the timing, Ms. Penrod, who is a medical assistant there, placed the patient in the room after she got out of the bathroom at about approximately 10:05 a.m. In her complaint, the patient states immediately at administration of the iron, I had visible hives and redness running up my legs. I noticed this in the bathroom at the practice. So we're estimating that approximately 10 minutes went by from the time the infusion ended to after she went to the bathroom. Ms. Penrod immediately contacted Dr. Rainin, who was in another room performing a pellet procedure on a patient. Dr. Rainin went into KG's room as quickly as she could to evaluate the patient, quickly concluded the patient was having a hypersensitivity reaction to the iron infusion, and asked Ms. McMorrow to administer an EpiPen to KG. Ms. McMorrow had to go down to where the medication room was to get the EpiPen and then come back to administer the medication. In report, Ms. McMorrow said that she gave the EpiPen injection at the same time that 911 was called, which was 10:20 a.m. We provided our call sheet from the facility documenting that 911 was called at 10:20 a.m. And then shortly after that, paramedics arrived and they transported the patient to the emergency department at 10:35 a.m. That's really all I have to say. Thank you.
This is Deepa Golan. I'd like to just say, I'm not a doctor, but my personal opinion is it's kind of making light a little bit of the situation to call it a hypersensitivity reaction. I mean, it sounds like she went into full anaphylaxis, which is quite scary. And as a lay person familiar with anaphylaxis, 10 minutes is all it takes for somebody to die. So by saying it was only 10 minutes, I also feel like that belittles the situation a little bit. And I'm just commenting based on just the language. I feel like just hearing that, I find it just bothers me a little bit. And I just wanted to comment on that. And maybe a doctor could follow up. But
Dr. Espinel, currently, what protocols exactly do you have in place for a possible anaphylactic reaction to the iron infusion?
So the protocols are, once somebody is experiencing that, to administer an EpiPen and dial 911. That's what we have in place. We did after the, oh, go ahead.
No, please go ahead.
Well, after, you know, the next day after the incident, we have our weekly meeting, but we definitely discussed the occurrence that happened that Monday. And, you know, we ran through protocols again, just stating how we could have made it a faster response, because understandably, when you're having an anaphylactic reaction, time is of the essence. And, you know, it can seem like an eternity when you're to a person who's undergoing a reaction like that. And so, yeah, we, you know, talked about all kinds of ways that we could have made the response quicker. So we did that immediately after the next day.
And then what's your protocol currently for, at what level, now that you're doing TIVCs, et cetera, at what level do you decide for an iron infusion? What's your protocol?
So it's my understanding, you're asking is what is my protocol for deciding whether to initiate or whether to order an iron IV?
Whether to initiate, you know, PO by mouth and or intravenous, what exactly
I gotcha. Yeah. So no, first step is to do PO. And then when a patient is either not seeing therapeutic benefit from it, or maybe they don't tolerate that, PO, then an iron IV would be ordered. And of course, obviously too, we're running now a full iron panel, including the TIVC, before deciding to give iron. So.
Is there any reason you weren't running TIVCs in the past?
No, I just think it was oversight, so.
Okay. I mean, this situation could have gone, as you know, because I read the ER report, the patient had to have promoted intravenous, et cetera. It could have gotten a lot trickier than it did. There is a physician on premises when you guys are infusing, correct?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
I'm going to run it back up to Dr. Popiel and get his viewpoint.
I'm just concerned about the drip rate. Clearly, that was a, you know, a mistake between the doctor and the administering practitioner. I think the drip rate, obviously, but the dose itself too, you know, going beyond the guidelines of what's generally recommended by the company, just gives me some concern. Dr. Mason,
may I interrupt this, Scott King? I looked up today from the up-to-date website on the Venifer drug information sheet, and on page 2, it indicates that for non-dialysis dependent chronic kidney disorder patients, that dosage has also been administered as 2 infusions of 500 milligrams on day 1 and day 14, and there's limited experience with that, but again, up to date, I understand that Venifer has something different, but I think up to date is a very credible source, and that is that dosage is listed on there.
This is Dr. Popiel, that's all I have for questions.
Okay. Dr. Rubin?
This is Dr. Rubin. I don't think there's argument about the dose. I think the attitude of both the complainant and Dr. Espinal are great. You know, they're not combative. They're understanding that there was some shortcomings. I have concern that there's been multiple times when there seems to be some protocol that was developed that had some holes in it. For instance, not running TIVCs or iron profiles and solely relying on ferritin. For instance. And so we can't just rely on ferritin because that's not how hemodynamics and iron dynamics work. And then there was a calculator that seems to be proprietary, which no longer is in effect anymore. Simply, it seems to me simply because there was this incident and they're going to divide it up. So I, to me, there's some inconsistencies here, and because of that, I feel that a letter of concern is necessary, non-disciplinary, but I can't really put it together, but it's not on professional conduct. It seems to be not following medication guidelines for that which we enjoy our privileges to do, but I'm concerned in terms of, I appreciate the heck out of the clinic and Dr. Espinal and the complainant bringing this to, you know, the board's attention, but just a couple of things that I've heard. I don't know if any of the other board members agree, but it just seems to me that there's inconsistencies and it's almost like there's a protocol that was written that's being followed, but not being followed. It's supposed to be followed, but it's an incomplete protocol, but then there was no individualization. That's just what struck me. And so I'm not making a motion and bringing that up for discussion in terms of my positioning.
I have to agree with you, Dr. Rubin. I mean, the things that the hemodynamics, the TIBCs, this patient did have an increased H&H RBCs. I'm leaning towards that with you. I think it's just to just follow a set protocol. She has implemented TIBC. This patient did unfortunately have an elevated WBC and also has increased blood glucose. But there's just some inconsistencies that I'm seeing that you also have pointed out. I don't know if Dr. Fiel or Dr. Spatt are seeing that or.
Just Dr. Bofield. No, I would totally agree that those are all valid points, and you know that would be what I would be leaning towards too. Would be something along the lines of a letter of concern.
How about you, Dr. Campbell?
Absolutely, I concur with all of that. I respective also to the reaction. I'm not sure exactly what the EMT's training respective to the IV training, if that includes how to recognize, symptoms that could lead to an allergic reaction or not. I would definitely, encourage that training to occur with the medical assistant. And then also we heard about the medical or the EMT having to run to the medical room and get the EpiPen in return. I'm not sure if that's just something that's a quick jaunt across the hallway or it's a locked room followed by a locked cabinet. And, and so if we, in a room where this IV medication is administered, if having an emergency supply of, an EpiPen, whatever the case may be, in close proximity to be, administered by, the appropriate personnel at the right time immediately to help prevent the exacerbation of the allergic reaction might be something that can also be put in place. I'm just talking out loud here. And again, I do support the letter of concern. We have the physician that actually wrote the order was not there that particular day. And so then we have an EMT there that does have training. But then the doctor was performing a procedure in another area. And so the coordination of patient care is ultimately, left in the wind just a little bit. And now we have an allergic reaction. And so that's all I have for now.
Ms. Gallen, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely have some concerns. I think a letter of concern is appropriate.
Okay. Ms. Tippett.
I agree, letter of concern.
And Dr. Spatt.
Yeah, I agree with what has been mentioned, and I would like to have the letter of concern as well.
And how, who would like to make the motion for the phrasing of the letter of concern?
This is Dr. Rubin trying to. I'm having trouble with him. I mean, a non-disciplinary letter of concern. This is not a motion. A non-disciplinary letter of concern for not following or failing to follow established appropriate medical guidelines, or not supervising staff appropriately, or, I mean, you know, the right wasn't even written for. And so, I mean, I get it, you know, we're in a clinic and, you know, your staff and you're kind of rolling and you're doing this stuff and rolling, but it was more just that there were loose ends and it sounds like it was a little sloppy, but that's not a motion. And so I need help with the lingo. If anybody wants to make it, that's kind of what I'm trying to get out. Or if that's an acceptable motion, then put it that way, but I don't think it is.
How about just coordination of patient care? Can we do that?
I think I'd be happy to make that motion. Or Dr. Campbell, if you'd rather make the motion since you came up with the verbiage, that feels fine.
Yeah, I'm happy to make the motion. This is Dr. Campbell. I'd like to make a motion that we issue the physician in this case a non-disciplinary letter of concern regarding failure to properly coordinate patient care. And I think that'll sum it up.
This is Dr. Rubin. I second that motion.
Ms. Hazard, could you do roll call for us?
Yes. Dr. Sadlick?
Aye.
Dr. Popio?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Ms. Gallen?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Dr. Spatt?
Aye.
Dr. Rubin?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. King. Thank you, Dr. Snell.
Thank you.
Let's move on to case number 21201. And Dr. Spatt, you're recused. And Dr. Collins, I'm sorry, is this Mr. McCaffrey?
Mahaffey, yes, Steve Mahaffey.
Dr. Sadlick?
Hello? Uh-oh, looks like Dr. Sadlick ran out of batteries.
Dr. Sadlick, are you with us?
This has happened before, and I think he can hear us. I can't guarantee it. And then he dials back in.
Dr. Sadlick, is that you? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Dr. Sadlick, members of the board, this is case number 21-201. On September 2nd, 2021, the State of Arizona Naturopathic Physicians Medical Board received a complaint from PY, who outlines many allegations. Although in her complaint, PY refers to other patients who have, quote, suffered harm from Brio, end quote, no other patient complaints have been received. In her response to the board, Dr. Colin addresses each of PY's allegations and provided the board with copies of PY's medical records. PY, a 61-year-old female, presented to respond on April 26, 2021, with a recent diagnosis of breast cancer. According to PY, she was treated by respondent at Brio Clinic from April 26th through May 21st, 2021, and followed up with an aftercare for 3 months. PY stated she wanted to quote-unquote shrink a stage 1 breast tumor and avoid surgery, chemo, and radiation therapy, but saw no improvement after the therapy.
Is the complaint also on the phone? No.
Yes,
you are.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Your initials?
PY.
Okay. Mr. Mahaffrey or Dr. Collin, can you give us your response?
Steve Mahaffrey on behalf of Dr. Collin. I'll trust, or I hope that the board has read the response of Dr. Collin to each of the allegations made by PY. My take on this in going through the medical records is that PY simply is looking for a refund because she's unhappy with the results. That doesn't mean she's entitled to one, and doesn't mean that Dr. Collin did anything wrong or violated any of the professional guidelines set out at 32.15.01.31. I'd also like to note in the investigational review report, Ms. Anthony notes that imaging reports are not included. That was an oversight. There's a whole tab in PY's records called pathology, and for whatever reason, that pathology tab was not scanned and produced pursuant to the subpoena duces tecum. It was discovered by Dr. Collin and myself yesterday that that was the case. I provided those 25 pages of imaging reports to Ms. Anthony late last night. I don't know if she got them last night or this morning. They were redacted, and I asked that they be included. So the part about imaging reports are not included was true at the time Ms. Anthony wrote the report, but is not true overall. So I do ask that you include those and determine that the imaging reports were part of her client or her patient file. As far as the potential violations that Ms. Anthony sets forth, I don't believe that subsection V, as in Virginia, is applicable given that we have now provided the pathology reports. Excuse me. As far as engaging in subsection R, engaging in conduct or practice that's contrary to recognized standards of ethics of the naturopathic profession, I don't think anything that Dr. Collin did violates any of the standards of ethics. Her chart notes, I think, are very good chart notes. And as this board knows, I've been in front of you before with others, whose chart notes aren't quite as good. So these are, typewritten chart notes, very readable, and explain everything that, Dr. Collin did, with patient PY. And Dr. Collin is also, present, obviously, and can answer any of your questions. Regarding the allegation that Dr. Larry Hellman and some, I don't know if that is the use of perhaps the argument under subsection U, that is false or fraudulent or deceptive or misleading advertising. The truth is Larry Hellman does have a doctorate and as such may refer to himself as a doctor, but he doesn't practice. And I note that there's not an allegation that Larry Hellman performed services or stood in as though he were a naturopath. He simply was on the marketing side of Brio Medical. One of the things I also want to make clear to this board is that Dr. Collin is not the sole owner of Brio. She has a CEO and other people that she answers to who deal with the marketing side. She does the medical side, the physician side. So as far as what goes on the website, she has to defer to her bosses. And if you read what is on the website about Larry Hellman, I think it is very clear that he doesn't practice naturopathic medicine. And I don't know how anyone could read that bio and think that he does. And I included that in our response, so the entire bio on the webpage. So I don't know how anyone could have been deceived thinking that he was that. So with that, I'm certain the board has questions, or if you do, Dr. Colleen is available to answer, or if you have them directed toward me, I'd be happy to answer as well. And I guess in summary, we believe that this complaint should be dismissed. There is no unprofessional conduct. There's no harm alleged. It's simply, I didn't like the result and I want my money back. And PY is an attorney and is using coercive methods to, all coercive methods to attempt to get my money back.
That's completely irrelevant. I am using the exact method that has been given to me to address this. It's not coercive at all. And your statement of my complaint is really, it's completely untrue. You're missing material elements of the complaint. So I would like to give a narrative when I'm given the chance, but there's nothing coercive about filing a complaint with the Licensing Bureau, which I was actually referred to by the Arizona Consumer Affairs Bureau to address this. That there's not to suggest that I'm coercive, but I'm going through proper means is wrong. There's a lot that was just misstated, and I don't know what pathology reports you're referring to. I provided pathology reports from doctors. Dr. Colleen provided none.
We'll hear you in just a moment. I need to run through with my board members and get some feedback from them. So,
can I just also make a point that the website as it is today is different than the website when it was when I went to Brio and was Lord to Brio, and Dr. Hellman absolutely represented himself as a practicing physician at Brio, that they had two physicians and the website said our physicians. It did not say our marketing department is a PhD who doesn't practice. Absolutely did not include that. So that's just a flat out lie. He absolutely represented himself, whether or not he practiced. The whole point was that they had two doctors, not one doctor, and that you were getting advice from a doctor and making a decision to go there, a medical doctor.
Okay, hold tight for me. I need to run through with my board members questions for the physician. So hang tight. Dr. Papil, can I get some feedback from you?
Yeah, Dr. Cullen, I guess just in continuation of that statement, that was one of the questions I had for you. Was there the potential that there was overpromised results by Mr. Dr. Hellman? Just there was a couple things that I was concerned about with that. So I guess, you know, when I think about marketing and reaching out to the patient, my concern is that there is a sales component to this. And so I guess was there a potential for being, you know, somewhat fraudulent and or not fraudulent, that's a strong word, but overpromising what you guys can provide?
You know, if there was, I want to note that during her first initial visit with me, PY actually asked me, if you recommend surgery, should I go home and have surgery and then come back?
Absolutely not. That's a lie. That's a lie. That's a lie. That's a lie. I can't sit here as an attorney and listen to lies.
Ma'am, let me have your time.
She's just absolutely lying. And there are internal inconsistencies in her notes, which are that she contradicts herself in her notes.
Why don't you take notes right now? You take notes and listen, and then you can address it during your time, okay?
It's not overpromising. She's responsible for what's on the website. I went through line by line.
We're asking questions to the doctor.
we do not want to hear your response to our questions. You'll get your opportunity here shortly, okay?
Go ahead, Dr. Popiel.
All right. So to continue, she actually asked me that question. And I said yes, that you could actually go home and get surgery and come back. And she said, what would be the benefit of my stay here? And I said, well, then we would begin the process of detoxification or ridding the body of unwanted things. I like to recommend surgery when it's a small tumor. I agree with that philosophy that if we can get that out of the body, I want to look at the long term of that individual, and I want them to, you know, have them out. So that was one of the things that I said, even though I realized afterwards that she really did not want that, but that was what I thought based on my education, my experience, my expertise, that would be the best format for her. However, she also asked me, how long do you think that this process would take to heal, or to heal your body, or to bring it back into balance? And I said, it's variable for everybody, but the process really can be years. It can be 1 to 2 years. So it's very arduous, and that is another reason why I recommend surgery.
Dr. Rubin?
I appreciate that so give me just a second, Dr. Stanley. I just had a couple more questions. It does look like that was, discussed numerous times, and that, frustrated the patient. I guess it certainly seems like in the documentation that was discussed numerous times, and it irritated the patient that, you might even suggest surgery. Is that kind of the feedback you were getting as well?
Yes, but again, that's just how I felt it to be the best thing, because I've seen when people haven't done that.
Yeah. I guess, let's see. I'm done for now, Dr. Stadelick. I've got a couple other questions, but here I just got to get myself taken care of.
Okay, I'll circle back to you. Dr. Rubin?
This is Rubin. This is a question from Ms. Anthony. Ms. Anthony, so this packet of 25 pages that we got today, pathology, ultrasound, et cetera, that was something that wasn't included up front, or was it truly a mistake that it somehow didn't scan to you, or how did that occur?
And so when I, this is Gail Anthony, when I originally subpoenaed the medical records and received those records from Attorney Mahaffey, those documents were not included, and I noted that in my investigative report. Subsequently, I did receive an email from Mr. Mahaffey last evening with the documents, and as he stated, they recognized after a secondary review, apparently, of the case that they had failed to include those documents. So he did give those documents to me. I asked them to be redacted last night, and he sent those either late last night. I got them this morning when I came in, and I forwarded them to you this morning. So what was not originally included with the records that were originally subpoenaed, he did subsequently include those records late last night, early this morning.
Mr. Mahaffey or Dr. Colleen, where did you get those records that were sent to us this morning?
Steve Mahaffey here. Do you want to answer? Go ahead. They're in the patient file, but Dr. Colleen handed the patient file to her assistant and said, copy all of these, copy everything in here. We got to comply with the subpoena. Handed the patient file back to Dr. Colleen, believing that everything had been scanned, we sent it off via email. I guess a large document carrier. And it wasn't until Dr. Colleen and I were talking yesterday and preparing that we realized that those reports were not included in the response to the subpoena duces tecum. So obviously immediately realized that it happened, and we wanted them to be part of this court's or this tribunal's file. I prepared them last night and sent them over to Ms. Anthony.
Got it. Dr. Colleen, I believe it's Colleen, correct? Not Colin?
It's actually Colleen, but it's okay.
Colleen. Colleen, like acetyl. So
yeah.
You have, Mr. Mahaffey said that you have bosses. And so is that true, that the structure is that you are not the owner, or there's somebody above you in the hierarchy at Brio?
Yeah, Brio was opened by a group of people, and then I worked for them, but then I was given shares after, I think, 6 months. Or maybe three to 6 months.
So in that structure, was that, I got it. So I'm assuming that was before the complainant was a patient of yours.
That I was given what? Oh yeah. Yeah, that's correct.
So you own the clinic. So, given the hierarchy, I mean, do you report to somebody, or are you on an even basis or keel, or how is it? And the reason that I'm asking this is because if you own that clinic, my belief, I don't know the law here, but if you're the owner and you don't have employees, then you are responsible for any medical information as a treating physician, it sounds like the sole treating physician, of what's purported and of those who are bringing physicians to you. You do have some ownership of that. And should be aware of it. So I'd love to. And so. And so do you have ownership of that, or do you not? Yeah. How is that structured?
So I don't have the majority ownership. How it's structured is I just take care of the medical side of it. They take care of the marketing side of it. I do try to peruse the website. You know, now and again to, you know, make changes. If I don't like something, I can tell them and say, you know, wait, I don't want to say it in that format or get that off or, you know, any of those things. There are some things still on the website that that's not how I would do it, but, that's how they want to do it. So
did Larry Hellman tell the complainant that a lesion under 2 centimeters can and will be shrunk by your methods?
I don't think he would say it like that. I think he would say that we would look to treat the without conventional methods as long as we felt it was going in the right direction. So we have like kind of a stipulation of, you know, anything over X size that we would definitely, you know, not do it that way. But I wasn't there, so I don't exactly know what verbiage he used, but he knows that, no, we're not going to make definitive claims on, yes, we will shrink the tumor. We like to talk in terms of, you know, the body, you know, we want to enhance the immune system, and we want to detoxify the body and allow the body to do the job of the body.
Can you present this case to the board properly?
Pardon me?
Please. Could you please present this case to the board, how you see this? Because nothing was indicated in your initial chart note of 426. It was a single diagnosis code, if I remember, of C50.511. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if you could present the case and define this case for us, because it would help me understand where you're coming from and how you were designing the treatment plan, which it seems like you designed as we went through almost 400 pages of records. And I would appreciate it if you could present this case to us. And you can speak in high terms. Thank you.
I just read PY presented to clinic with a small right-sided breast mass that was biopsy to be ER, PR positive, HER2 negative. She wanted to do this without the approach of any conventional medicine. And looking at that, my discussion with her is I would, you know, given my experience, would have it removed, you know, by surgery. And even at that point, we would still want to, you know, do some treatments to detoxify the body, really try to still get it back into balance, even maybe find the etiology, which I don't ever say will promise in finding the etiology, but rather that, you know, we're going to look for things as was seen in some of the other types of testing that we did, for instance, heavy metal testing and environmental testing, such as that. So we, you know, we look to see if anything is blatantly out, you know, that it just kind of like jumps out at me. And then meanwhile, I like to just really reinforce the gut, you know, begin there, try to heal the gut, you know, watch the types of food. And that was kind of how I based my treatment on, because if the body is back into balance, I believe then the body then, you know, turns back on P53, you know, things of that sort. So that was my approach to this, to look at it, but also to be diligent as we were doing this, that this was not going to occur within the 4 month or 4 week time period.
Okay, that's fine. I was just trying to get the presentation of the physician.
Okay.
Which pathology reports were you referring to when you talked about ERPR positive, HER2 negative, and a small breast lesion? And were there any other significant diagnoses on that path report you wish to talk about?
So I don't believe there were. Let's see. But it did state in one of them that there was that it was ERPR positive. And so that's where I based that off of.
Yeah, it was. I read it. I already know it. I'm surprised you don't. What about DCIS? Is that important to you?
Oh, I saw that. Uh-huh.
Okay, well, I'm glad you saw that, but you didn't indicate it. There's no diagnosis code. There wasn't any indication whatsoever that you had that path report, which is why I asked where they came from. Is it date stamped when those path reports and other ultrasound reports were entered into your chart or given to you? Did you have them when you first met with?
Yeah, I did.
You had those.
So the DCIS.
Right. And how? Okay. Had you been? Tell me about the ultrasound history that she had. Had you been following her? Did you look back at her history and did you follow it? What do you mean? I'm meaning, did you look back at her history and did you follow that course? I was just wondering what the history of the size of her lesion was.
Oh, well, it says it is a 1.6 by 1.1 by 1.6.
How long had that lesion been followed? This is what I'm trying to get out of you, if you know the case. I'm doubting you know the case, leading me to believe that you may have prescribed a generic protocol for this person. Because I just got 25 pages of path and old ultrasounds and a path report from 3/30/31 indicating stuff that you failed to put on your chart note and failed to tell me until I asked. And so I'm wondering, could you please present the case to me and the rest of the board? And for everybody listening on the call, I'm a board certified naturopathic oncologist. I'm a specialist in oncology, which is why we're able to have the depth of discussion, and this is a pure oncology case. And so this may take a little while. Go ahead.
We're actually looking all the way back. I mean, she has imaging, you know, going back to 2019 of a 1.7 centimeter breast mass, which to me, you know, and it goes all over. 9 o'clock position, 8 o'clock position, 7. So, I mean, those things are kind of, those things kind of move. It depends on who's looking at it. There wasn't much change to it. That's what we're looking at. There was a lymph node at one point. I didn't see that. I didn't even palpate that. And then that one actually, had later on it wasn't evident. And then it was just
when was her first pathology? When was her first biopsy?
Oh, let me think. She had, I think I just wrote down that she had the one in, March?
3/30/21. So that was her first biopsy?
I'm trying to remember if that was her first one. Because I think she said,
Mr. Chair.
Following it.
This is Dr. Rubin. Pardon? Mr. Chair. I'd like to move this case. I move to move this case to formal interview when the respondent is more prepared to answer to this case. At this point, I don't feel that the length of the, what I need to do here to find out the information can be done if there's ill preparation.
Okay, so you're making a motion, Dr. Rubin?
Move to formal interview, please.
Okay.
Dr.
And the reasoning is you'd like the Dr. Colleen to put this into a more formalized version for you?
Well, I don't think the respondent is ready. I asked for a presentation of the case, and she can't do it. And so I think in order to not waste people's time and to, you know, be able to answer my questions, I'd love them to be more prepared. And I think the board may be more prepared because we just received an absolutely critical portion of the case today, not to mention that there was about 372 pages that we had to look through. This is going to take me some time to get through, and I'm just foreshadowing that this may be more appropriate for a formal interview, but I'd love your advice on it. Even though the motion is on the table, it doesn't have to be seconded.
May I speak for a moment, please? I think
that's up to Dr. Sadalek.
Go ahead, Dr. Colleen, before we...
No, it's actually PY. It's PY. May I speak?
I think
the fact that she doesn't know the case, she didn't know the case, she didn't go over my history, she didn't go over the pathology, she didn't prepare the pathology, she didn't speak to my doctor, she didn't speak to the radiologist, speaks volume. She's not prepared because it was a generic protocol, not for cancer, despite what was advertised on the website. She was the medical director. She was responsible for what was on that website. Dr. Hellman held himself as a doctor. I repeated what was on the website. The website says the program is, quote unquote, state of the art cancer treatment designed to reduce tumor burden. So does after that, there's a pamphlet of information that's provided to the patient, which absolutely should be prepared by the medical director, which says the same thing. I'm not a stupid person. I asked the right questions. I did not want to have surgery. I'm still not having surgery. And by the way, in my travels, in my own research, because she left me with no referrals, no anything. I mean, I didn't go to Arizona and fork over $30,000 to be told to have surgery in an out-of-network provider that, by the way, she refused to fill out the documentation for until the day before I was leaving. So I think I can tell you more about the pathology.
And you're more than welcome.
And one more important thing is I do not have this to give to anyone here. I had to go find another oncologist after spending that money and that time and 2.5 months on her protocol, her post-treatment protocol, which specifically states I sent it to Doc. This is important, excuse me. I just sent it to Gail Anthony because I don't have the paper she provided in the response. I filed this with the Arizona Consumer Affairs Bureau because it is fraudulent.
We're aware of all this. We have a motion on this table.
I don't have the response. I just waited with all due respect since 2 o'clock. I don't have the response. She lied. She's come back and flat out lied.
That's a board issue that will have to come by the board.
Can I just say, because I don't know what she sent you, I don't know what's missing. I just sent you the treatment protocol, which I got on the day I was leaving, which meant I never had informed consent. My only informed consent was to what's on the website and in the patient information, which very, very specifically, which I very, very specifically outlined in my...
Why, if you continue, we're going to have to disconnect and we're going to have to go to a different line. So I'm going to ask you for the last time to not make any further comment. One of the board members He has a motion. I need to follow protocol, and I need to have my motions completed. So,
okay. Can she just give
me... I'm not... Right now, we're doing a motion. Not your time to talk.
Okay.
We have a motion that Dr. Rubin made.
Steve Mahaffey, may I address the board before voting on the motion?
All right. Go ahead.
Real briefly, I realized that this is a lot of information that I gave you last night, and I offered Ms. Anthony to continue the appearance, the initial appearance, and I would request that we do continue the initial appearance to the next board meeting or the next available board meeting, rather than move this to a formal interview, given the late disclosure of that much information. Thank you.
I'm going to have to ask Dr. Rubin if he's willing to modify his motion.
This is Dr. Rubin. This is Dr. Rubin. Thank you, Mr. Mahaffey, for saying that. I am not willing to modify my motion. I feel I am more prepared for this case than your client is. And I just received the info and have spent hours on this case. And I feel like I know as much as I know. I'm not saying that I found any fault. What I'm saying is that it is a shame to me that your client didn't come prepared when I did. Regardless, that pathology and those ultrasounds you have had since supposedly 4/26 of 21 or prior or after, I don't know. I've had them since about what, 11 o'clock. And we don't know how ER positive. She didn't know there was no, I am done. We are moving this to formal interview. If somebody seconds my motion and it's accepted, I understand. If it's not, my motion stays.
And
thank you, Dr. Rubin.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, this is Justin with the AG's office. Just a quick point of clarification. If the board is going to move this to formal interview, it will have to, you know, identify the factual and legal basis before, you know, for the formal interview invitation. And so, you know, that can be either just consistent with the investigative report, or the board could add other potential statutes that the board feels are an issue that are not included in the investigative report. So that's my only you know, recommendation is that you make sure you're making clear in the motion what the factual and legal basis for the formal interview will be. Otherwise, you know, I do also think that it could also be that we, you know, it might be prudent to simply continue the initial investigation if the board is not, you know, sure at this time what factual and legal violations are at issue. I just want to make sure we have the full range of factual and legal conclusions available if we are going to move forward to formal interview.
I'm working on that. Please give me a second.
Dr. Sadlick, this is Karen Tibbett. I realize that there's been a lot of talking out of turn, but I do believe that as part of this initial interview that we should hear from the complainant.
Let me ask Mr. Larson, we got a motion made. Is it appropriate to let the complainant speak at this point, or would you rather have us roll through this motion that Dr. Rubin made?
Well, like I said, Mr. Chair, I think, you know, the motion needs to be at least, you know, just clarified a little bit to make sure that we have the full range of what are the facts and what are the legal allegations that will be at issue at a formal interview.
This is Dr. Rubin. I'd like to amend my motion to include that I find potential violation of ARS 3215.01.31 subsection R, that potentially standards of ethics of naturopathic profession or potential danger to the health or welfare or safety, based on that the doctor seems unprepared for the case And because of that, I can't be sure without further interview that she was prepared for the case at the time of treatment. That's my final part of my motion. And Mr. Larson, if that's not good enough to move to formal interview, I'm happy to discuss it.
And Mr. Chair, members, I do believe that statute, subsection R of 32-1501-31 was cited in the investigative report. So, you know, if you'd like, Dr. Rubin, you could just simply state, you know, I would like to make a motion to offer an invitation to a formal interview based on the factual and legal allegations included in the investigative report.
Still moved. That was Rubin.
Dr. Rubin, can you formally state that for us, please, so we can make a motion?
This is Dr. Rubin. This is my final amendment or change of my motion. I move that we move this case to formal interview based on potential violations in the investigative report.
And that statute, are you referring to 3215R?
3215031 subsection R.
Okay.
In our investigative report. No. End of motion.
Okay. And Mr. Larson, yeah, board member that Ms. Tibbetts wants to hear from PLive, would you rather have us complete this motion, vote it down, however we'd like to go, and then hear from PR, or would you, what would you see why?
Well, I guess I would ask if either if PY would prefer to wait to till the formal interview to make a presentation, or she feels that she, you know, there's anything she would like to state today that she hasn't yet. And I would also ask Mr. Mahaffey if he would have any objection to PY doing so insofar as she does have anything she'd like to share today.
I guess I do think that the board needs to rule, make a, you know, vote on this motion. And if it carries, I think we're done for today. I don't think anything that would be said could be taken as evidence, because I think there would need to be a formal interview, placing things, as Dr. Rubin's, motion. So I guess I would object to her talking. I think she's talked enough so far, and there will be another time at the next hearing.
Can I just ask, I'm sorry, Mr. Mahaffey, are you an attorney?
Yes, he is.
And who are you with? Which law firm?
Well,
I'll
address the board. I have my own law firm.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, excuse me.
I may have consulted with you, which means that you should recuse yourself.
Okay.
You have not consulted with me, and I'm not recusing myself.
We'll worry about that later. I need to get this motion. I need to get this meeting rolling. So we have a motion on the table, formal interview. Dr. Rubin made the motion for us. I need a second, or I need to come up with a different game plan. So, board members, we've got that formal interview. Who would like to second Dr. Rubin's motion?
This is Dr. Popiel. I second that motion.
Okay, we got a second. We got a first second. So, Ms. Andy, can we get roll call?
Dr. Sadlick.
Aye.
Dr. Popiel.
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts.
Aye.
Ms. Gallen.
Aye.
Dr. Campbell.
Aye.
Dr. Spatt. Dr. Spatt.
I believe Dr. Spatt recused himself.
Oh, you're right. I apologize. Dr. Rubin.
Aye.
Motion carries.
Motion carries. Thank
Secretary. Thank you, Dr. Rubin. T.Y. will talk later. Thank you, Dr. Thomas McCaffrey. I need to roll on. We need to roll on case number 20-164. Dr. Simone, can I call it?
Yes.
Whatever our executive director has.
Dr. Sadlick, members of the board, this is case number 20-164. In August of 2020, the State of Arizona Naturopathic Physicians Medical Board received notice from the Arizona Department of Health Services outlining an apparent discrepancy between the number of medical marijuana certifications issued by respondent between January 1st, 2020 and May 31st, 2020, and the number of CSPMP database queries respondent performed during that time frame. According to the notice, respondent certified 23 patients for medical marijuana during that time frame and queried the database zero times. Respondent did fail to update the CSPMP database with her current last name, which contributed to these discrepancies. Her failure to provide up-to-date information to the Arizona Board of Pharmacy did result in these issues, causing staff to open a case relating to this matter and took board staff time away from other issues at hand. Even after respondent was notified of the first discrepancy, she failed to update the pharmacy board, leading to a second notice to be generated. In review of the chart note provided, respondent failed to provide the complete chart note, leaving board staff to follow up with her relating to the required documentation. Additionally, respondent failed to provide sufficient evidence that she certified patients for medical marijuana only after review of the required CSPMP query while working for doctor referrals.
Dr. Simone?
Yes.
Can you give us a little bit of history?
So with the original 23, I was called as a substitute for a physician at a satellite location for doctor referral. So when I arrived there, we had no... Let me rephrase. Before that, I had talked to their manager, their general manager at the time, and had asked about the pharmacy board, and they said everything was printed. My mistake was that I assumed that was going to be okay. So when we got there, we had no internet connection. We were in a dead zone. So all the stuff was already printed, and I signed off on those. The other five was when I was working at another office in the West Valley. So that's what happened with the first one. I didn't think about my profile corresponding with my license and the name. I thought it was just a profile. And I thought they were verifying it based off my license, not necessarily the profile on the pharmacy board. So I submitted, even talked to the previous person I had worked with during that time and the manager about providing the paperwork. I connected them with Gail. They were talking to their lawyers. I don't know what happened. I thought they had provided everything with that regard. When the 400 came about, I think that's when it dawned on me that it may have just been my name. I don't remember why I didn't go back in to see or how I could go about changing my profile. But at that time in February 2021, when we got the 400, I was already done certifying marijuana with doctor referrals.
Are you still currently with that organization?
No, sir. I stopped working with them October 2020.
2020, okay. And then are you doing it on your own clinic, or are you doing it for another organization?
I've only done one since then, and that was it. Shortly after I was done with, the month after I was done with Dr. Pearls under my own clinic,
okay.
Under my own practice.
What are you currently doing? What's your focus of practice?
My focus practice is pain management, essentially, with injection therapy. I also do bioidenticals, IV therapy, and occasional acupuncture.
Okay. Let me get my board members to give me some feedback. Can I start with you, Dr. Sofio?
Yes. Dr. Simone, on what I was reading, so essentially we have one child. Am I reading this all right?
Yes.
All these cases, yes. And all these cases, we have one chart now, correct?
Yes.
Okay. I guess, you know, based on looking at that one chart note, it certainly does look decent from a standpoint of being thorough and certainly better than a ton we've seen historically. So, you know, I'm certainly concerned that we don't have additional chart notes to look at. You know, the one we do have seems fairly reasonable from the standpoint of being thorough overall. I don't really have any other questions right now at this point.
Okay. Dr. Spatt?
I don't have any questions at the moment. Thank you.
And Dr. Rubin?
I don't have any further questions. Thank you.
Dr. Campbell?
No other questions.
Ms. Gallen?
No questions.
Okay. Ms. Tippett?
No questions.
So, Dr. Simone, where we're running into that difficulty is the PMP, et cetera. Do you have any other ideas what could have happened to the 496? I think was a number, and then there was only five checks out of 496 that we'll run through.
So, right. So I provided with the original 23. I did provide a screenshot of what I had certified, and then I provided again in February of 2021. So that was under my maiden name. And so that's where the zero checks were coming up, because I was certifying under my married name, Simone, which is also consistent with my license. And this is where the issue lies, is that my profile, which I thought is just my profile, not like a pharmacy board account, licensing, was under Palacio. And so my mistake was assuming that the pharmacy board was seeing that my license, because my license is Mylene Palacio Simone, was potentially a married name, but that was not the case. So I did since then have changed my name through they have a formal process of changing that. And I have since then changed it. I have also talked to other physicians to see if they had done the same thing, and they were also unaware that that was the case as well. They didn't realize also that they had to formally change their name on the pharmacy board.
Okay, so you could have run PMPs through Palladio or Simone, is what you're saying?
No, sir. What I'm saying is that there's only one profile, and my profile is under my maiden name. It was created before I had legally changed my name into my married name, and had maintained that profile without essentially formally changing the profile with the pharmacy board with my married name. So this whole time has been under Palacio, and that's where I made my mistake of assuming that they were verifying it based off of my license, which is Simone. And that's what I was certifying these records for, and which is why the discrepancy came up that there was nothing under Simone because everything was under Palacio.
Ms. Anthony, were you able to check under all maiden married names, et cetera, et cetera?
Dr. Sadlick, members of the board, if you could, I'm not following your question. I'm sorry. So
what I'm wondering is, with such a large discrepancy, she, from what I'm hearing her state, does she believe it was done? The question is, under which pretense or which name? And I'm trying to discern if there was another way to check through the PMP if another name, maiden name, et cetera, had been used.
So the respondent provided us with a copy of a prescriptive search history that looks to be under her maiden name. That was a limited number. And when she was certifying for medical marijuana, she was certifying under her maiden name. And so it wasn't coming up. She did provide the RX search under Palacio, and there was a handful that did come up under her as a requester. But it's unclear if she actually pulled these, if these were pulled by other people. It's just unclear where this actual prescriptive search came from. There's no date range on it. It's just a copy. It was reported on 11/4 of 2021. So it was not reported at the time she was certifying for medical marijuana, because that was in 2020.
Yeah, that's what I saw. Board members, do you have any thought processes? So there's a discrepancy. Normally, with these types of cases, with the discrepancy and/or the PMP issues, we normally do a lot of concern with CME. Does anyone feel that's needed? Does anyone have any other thought processes?
This is Dr. Popiola. I feel like a letter of concern is necessary. I'm not really sure, given her, she's no longer doing certifications, if we need particular CME, but I'm open to that.
Ms. Tibbetts, your thoughts are?
I agree with a letter of concern. I'm not sure about the CME. I defer to the physicians for that.
Ms. Gallon?
Yeah, I'm still thinking about it, but I would like to hear a little bit more what everybody else has to say first.
Dr. Campbell.
Yeah, I concur with that. In light of the limited amount of records that we have being well in compliance, the things the board looks for, hopefully the board has impressed upon the position here that we take a very dim view to any reference that any physician would sign a document attesting to something if really they hadn't done that. And so you would definitely not expect to see anything like this again in the future. And with that being said, a letter of concern, non-disciplinary letter of concern, is something I'm in favor of.
I
think everything has been said, so I don't have any other thing to add. Thank you.
Dr. Rubin?
Ms. Dr. Rubin, I concur with the above. I think Dr. Campbell said it very well, but I do agree with a non-disciplinary CME order for charting. I'm not sure about the hours, but if you chart something that you didn't do, then that's a charting issue until somebody needs to go back to school and learn about that. Plus, I do believe that in sending that attestation form, correct me if I'm wrong, that you have reviewed, the physician has reviewed chart notes from prior in determining whether or not somebody would be good for either an initial recommendation or a renewal of that recommendation. I do appreciate that the doctor did suggest some naturopathic therapies. That's kind of new to the board and refreshing. And so I think it's a healthy thing to do. You know, we're on the board and, you know, we see this come through and, you know, we can't take one case just how we took another case. But I agree with staff recommendations. But I would suggest instead of 4 hours CME and charting, instead of 8 hours CME and charting, I would be happy with 4 hours. Because I do think that these charts looked a little bit better than things I've seen in the past where I've suggested 8 hours, not to compare them, but to compare them. So. Well, or this chart, this one chart. So.
Yeah, one chart. There is already in place an 8 hour CME that I believe AGMA has online, so she may be able to speed through that within the 4 hour time period. So I'll go ahead and make a motion that a non-disciplinary letter of concern with 8 hours of CME charting.
What's the concern?
And we'll need seconds, and then we'll need roll call.
Mr. Chair, I'll second that motion.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, this is Justin. Just really quick, could you specify what the area of concern is for the letter of concern, and also whether the non-disciplinary CME would be included in the already in required hours or be in addition to?
Okay. So it would be basically non-necessarily a letter of concern based upon failure to check the prescription monitoring. And then I would make a motion. There's no sense in giving someone an additional 8 hours besides the 30, that the 8 hours be inclusive of her 30 hours to be completed within a six-month period.
So, Dr. Salik, we have the original motion, and Dr. Popio, you seconded that motion. Did you want me to do roll call?
Yes, please.
Okay. Dr. Salik?
Aye.
Dr. Popio?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Ms. Gallen?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Dr. Spatt?
Aye.
Dr. Rubin?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Ready to move into number 9 and wrap up with budget. I'll let Ms. Anthony go from here.
Did anybody have any questions about the executive director report? I'll take that as a no. So no further, this does not need to be voted on.
Does anyone have any questions at all on 9A through D? Once, twice, no? Okay.
No.
Future agenda items, anything that you'd like the board to discuss? Board members, no?
This is Dr. Well, if you don't mind, I this is just kind of talking out loud here. I noticed, you know, with some other boards, as they've continued to grow and the cases are, and allegations are increasing and whatnot, sometimes the director is, you know, inclined to request that the board approve an allotment of funding to allow for, you know, whether part-time or full-time additional investigation staff. And I just wanted to put out there that, you know, I want Director Anthony, you know, I think she knows how much the entire board supports her and appreciates her efforts. And we do recognize that the number and quantity and sometimes length of these cases continues to grow. And that if there does come such a time when she feels that, you know, that she could use an assistant, that would definitely be something that the board would, or at least that, you know, I would feel comfortable discussing. And so I just kind of wanted to put that out there. And if it's something that needs, whether it needs to happen now or in the future, that we can definitely put that on the agenda.
Dale, currently, how many, let me back up to 9C. How many board cases, you sent that to me, I don't have that piece of paper in front of me, do you have currently under investigation?
Currently under investigation, we have 8. So we have 4 medical marijuana cases, 2 prescribing cases, 1 fee dispute, and 1 criminal conviction case.
I see what you're saying, Dr. Campbell. That's something that if we need to, we can put on the future agenda item. I'll leave it up to the executive director.
Okay, sounds good. That's one.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
But thank you, sir. No, I was just saying I just wanted to put that out there. I appreciate the moment.
Let me roll to call to the public. Anyone need to speak to the public? Public needs to speak to us. We're going to go once, twice, last time. Okay, adjournment. We're done. Thank you, everybody. I know it was kind of long. Appreciate everyone hanging in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Merry Christmas.
Take care.
Yeah, have a good night.